email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 20 years ago, Gordon Neufeld and Gabor Maté wrote a book together called Hold On To Your Kids. Hold On To Your Kids. It's about attachment theory and how to empower parents to maintain a good relationship with their children, despite everything that's going on in the world, the modern world we live in. The book has become a parenting Bible, and really what it's talking about is attachment theory. There's a couple of chapters that have been added over the years, two in 2013 about digital media, and then more recently about COVID. I just better get this out of the way. Gordon Neufeld, how are you doing, Gordon?
Gordon
is
fine, thank you.
Here in person, and Gordon is in the Convention Centre in Dublin tomorrow, guiding our youth, navigating attachment and the transition into adulthood. It's an all-day conference tomorrow. I'll give you the title of that again in case it's something you're interested in. Guiding Our Youth, Navigating Attachment and the Transition into Adulthood. Now, I'd imagine a lot of people around the country who work in that area will be interested in that and may not have known that it was on tomorrow. There are still some tickets available at Convention Centre tomorrow. So Gordon's here in studio and Gabor Maté is in New York. Hello, Gabor.
Hi.
Hi, Gabor.
I want to tell you something. The sound I'm hearing is very poor with all kinds of noise in the background. I don't think I can stay on this call.
Okay. I'll tell you what, we'll let you go and we'll try and get a better line. But just before you go, Gordon has told me you've just become a grandfather. So in case we don't get a line, I'm back.
I'm sorry. I can barely hear you.
Okay. So we're going to try and get a better line for Gabor Maté there. He's in New York. So he's just become a grandfather, you're saying, Gordon?
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
Yes,
isn't that brilliant?
First.
Yeah. Good to see you. Have you been in Ireland before?
No. Oh,
right.
I should have been.
Yeah.
3 days here, and why haven't I been here? This is wonderful. It took me this long to get here. I'm glad I am.
And you're getting a nice bit of weather as well.
Oh, it's gorgeous weather.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of this book, and I don't know why, because I could have done with it. I have an 18-year-old and a 13-year-old. Yeah, so if I'd read this 20 years ago, probably might have done a better job of parenting. But anyway, Hold On To Your Kids, Why Parents Need to Matter More Than Peers. So in the last 60 years, things have changed.
Yes, they've changed tremendously. Attachments are the hidden dynamic. You think of plants attached, you look at the forest, you know, all the roots, they're all hidden. And culture was meant to take care of all of that. And as culture has fallen apart, the attachments that children need to realize their full potential as human beings, to be fully human and humane, are in trouble. And we look around, we didn't realize that. And there was this myth that, you know, children need to separate from their parents to grow up. That adolescence is about autonomy and independence. And in fact, we're creatures of attachment, first and foremost. And the attachments need to be deeper, embedded in cascading care. So we can do our separateness without loss of togetherness and our togetherness without loss of separateness.
Okay. So what a lot of people would have thought and probably encouraged was that as our children grow up, that we try and make them independent.
Yes.
And part of that independence is hanging out with their mates.
That's right.
Their peer group. And we would have thought that's the way of the world. That's the way to do it. And you're telling us now that maybe it isn't.
It isn't.
Right.
We were mistaken.
Aha.
Can children have friends? Absolutely. But when those friends interfere with, when they matter more than parents do, attachment is a delivery system of care. And our children today are suffering all the signs of not feeling cared for, not being cared for, even though they can be in the midst of plenty. Why? Because attachments are like the umbilical cord. They hook us up so that the love that is there can get through. And adolescents need it more than ever.
Okay. Talk to us then, firstly, let's get the terms right here. Talk to us about attachment and attachment theory and how it works for parents and their children.
Well, attachment is about our drive for togetherness. It's about the pursuit and preservation of proximity. That would be the scientific term that you could take to physics and chemistry and biology as well. It's a universal principle There is no life outside of attachment. Every single particle in the universe is attached in some way to something. And if, you know, part of our body is detached, there's no life. It is the ground of everything.
So it's the oxygen. It's the oxygen of parenting.
It is. It is absolutely. And attachment does all the heavy lifting in parenting. When children are properly attached, they open up to influence. They want to be good for. They seek to be like, they learn the language of, they take on the form. Attachment does all the heavy work, except we thought we were doing it. And so we developed a superstition around parenting, taking all the credit for what nature was doing already.
Yeah. And then from that came bookshelves upon bookshelves upon bookshelves of books that offered us advice. And
exactly.
I suppose you're included. Now, you do have a go at the other parenting books.
We do.
What do you say about them?
Well, we wanted this to be different. We wanted this to be about relationship because that's the bottom line.
Mm.
And it wanted it to be like no other, although our publisher did not cooperate with us. I didn't want any how-tos in it. I thought if people really understood us about relationship, we all know how to do relationship. This is the bottom line. Mm. If they knew that, and that is the bottom line, is when I say hold on to your kids, it's not about holding them back. It's not about suffocating them. It's about preserving the connections that that they require, the context for growing up. Absolutely essential. Culture took care of all of this for us. Mm. Parenting wasn't even a word. If we go back 300-400 years, it became a verb instead of something that you enter because the child is attached to you and you become the parent the child needs because of that attachment.
And of course, we are mammals. And in the animal kingdom, attachment is there everywhere we look.
Everywhere. And the thing about attachment is in mammals, there is no drive to survive. And we misunderstood that because survival is a need. We assumed it was a drive. No, in the evolved wisdom of our brain, survival lie in togetherness. So the drive is for togetherness. The result is survival.
Uh-huh.
But the drive is for togetherness. That's why the pandemic was the perfect storm, is togetherness became the enemy when it is meant to be the answer to everything.
Right. I think we have Gabor Mate back on the line. Hello, Gabor.
Hi, nice to be back.
Yeah, and congratulations. I believe you became a grandfather.
2 nights ago, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. How does that feel?
Well, it's nothing like I can compare it to before. I think Gordon would know this. As a matter of fact, you know what? They've looked at brain scans of grandmothers when they look at their own daughter or their grandchild, and different parts of the brain lights up, actually. So it's a completely new experience of just real presence and peace. That's what I can say so far.
Yeah. One of the phrases in the book is an epidemic of immaturity because of peer orientation. Will you explain that to our listeners for us?
Well, maturation is a natural process, as Gordon points out, and I do have to emphasize that this book is very much Gordon's work. I just happen to do the writing with him. But maturation is what nature's agenda is for any creature, plant or animal, is that at the end of development, there should be a creature being able to handle themselves or survive and belong to the environment in which they develop. But it goes through certain phases. You can't force maturation. What you have to do is provide the right conditions for it. Now, in this society, instead of asking ourselves what conditions are necessary for the healthy development, net maturation, and individuation of our children, we try to make things happen through all kinds of parenting techniques and interventions and so on. And as Gordon points out, the basis of maturation is the healthy attachment relationship. And so that's what we have to provide. So rather than working to make kids mature, we have to provide the right conditions. Now, peer orientation is one of the major, not the only, but it's one of the major hindrances to healthy maturation, because the context for healthy maturation is the attachment relationship with nurturing adults and the nurturing adult communities. When you disrupt that, you're disrupting maturation and peer orientation in person, through the internet, through all these gadgets that we have, is a major block towards maturation.
So, Gordon, what we as parents naturally provide are phrases and things like unconditional love, care, we're solid, we're there for them.
Yes.
We accept them in all sorts of ways. All the things that a peer group don't do.
Yes, yes. But there's the that is so important, but if the child is not attached to us, it doesn't get through.
Right.
And that's why we need to matter more. And in this wounding world, attachment provides this wonderful shield, this oasis, this safety from the wounding outside, but on one condition, is that those that the child are attached to don't wound the child, and the child is attached to provide that shield. That becomes the answer. So yes, parental love is absolutely important. As much as it would be for a mother to love the unborn fetus to be there. But if the fetus isn't hooked up, there is no delivery system for that care. And so the book is about in our day and age, in our world, to be able to get our love through, our care through to our children so they can thrive and flourish. We have to take care of the attachments now, something that culture did previously, so that our love can get through.
And Gabor, you say that what is normal is oftentimes not natural or healthy. Would you explain that to us?
Sure. So in medical terms, normal means natural and healthy. So that there's a normal range of blood pressure within which life can thrive, normal range of body temperature, blood acidity, and so on. So normal equals healthy and natural. But we also have another use of the word normal, which is whatever we're used to. So if everybody in Ireland, which used to be the case, almost everybody beat their kids, then beating your kids was normal. But there was nothing healthy or natural about it.
Mm.
So we confused this word normal with healthy and natural. And many practices in today's culture, I mean, nobody advocates beating kids anymore, although parents still think it's okay to spank kids, many of them, although it's not. But many practices that are considered normal are actually unhealthy and unnatural.
Yeah, yeah.
So sending kids up to daycares at age 1.5 without nurturing adults being the primary relationships is normal in the sense that it's customary, but it's nothing healthy or natural about it.
So part of our role as parents then is to protect our children from societal norms. I'm thinking about, for example, smartphones. So sure, it's normal for every 12-year-old to have a smartphone, but it ain't natural and it ain't healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, it's like, I'll let Gordon take this one.
Okay. Yeah, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, what was it, in the 1600s, said the primary role of the parent is actually to be a buffer to society, to be a buffer, to be able to keep the societal pressures out, to be like everybody else, and so that there were the conditions for the child to become fully human and humane, enough of an individuality so they could resist these things. Today's parents are more conduits of that society than a buffer to society.
So they're on their mobile phones as well. They're on their smartphones.
And they're concerned that their children fit in and belong and be normal and see that, and take the normal as the issue. They don't want their children to stand out.
You can see why they would do that.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But the point is the relationships they need are the relationships with us. Those are the relationships that we are to be answer to their sense of belonging, to their sense of love, to being with, to being like, to do this. When that is there, it is a womb for the individuality that's required to be your own person among your peers.
Mm.
Otherwise, that individuality gets crushed.
Either of you can take this, because this is sort of the crux of it for me. When do we develop a sense of self? At what age about? And how does it come about? Gabor?
Well, again, I have to emphasize, much of what I know about attachment and child development
comes from Gordon.
Gordon, Gordon, you know. So sometimes I feel like John the Baptist declaring the coming of the Messiah. Although both of those guys ended up not very well, so maybe let's not use that analogy. But in terms of sense of self, it's a process. It's not like it's absent one day and then arrives the next day. It's a process. And the basis of that process is attachment, because children see themselves the way their parents see them. When the parents don't see them for who they actually are, the child doesn't see themselves. They can't arrive at a decent sense of themselves if their true self is not mirrored to them. And the basis of that is the attachment relationship, that unconditional positive regard that in a different context Paul Rogers talked about, but it's what parents have to provide. And then that provides the basis for individuation, where the child can become themselves. And it's only after that socialization happens, which is where we, not that these are totally separate processes, but it's like a pyramid. So the basis is attachment, and the second tier is individuation, when we become our own person with our own meanings, interpretations, preferences, understandings. And then comes socialization, when we can be ourselves, but in healthy contact with others. And so it's that pyramid that has to happen. And then that's how the self arrives. Now, at a certain point in our culture, we put socialization ahead of individuation. So people are, young creatures are encouraged to socialize before they have a healthy sense of self. So they never develop that healthy sense of self. So that's my quick response.
Yes, and Gordon, so they are getting a sense of who they are from their peer group.
Yes, they are. Yes, and their identification, their belonging, their sense of esteem, of mattering, comes from the peer group. Unfortunately, peers weren't meant to take care of each other. That was not how it was meant to be. It was meant to be cascading care, grandparents, parents, children, in this way. And so what happens is, instead of developing the deep relationships that make room for individuality, there is conforming superficial relationships that put the focus on sameness.
And it's important that we say that you're not saying that teenagers don't need their friends. They do, but they also need their parents.
What they need more, who needs to matter, are the adults who are the ones who are meant to deliver the care. Yeah. The next level of development is enough personhood so that you can be yourself among your peers. If you can't be yourself among your peers, if that individuality is crushed, it's premature. Personhood.
And you're malleable, and follow the lead of your peers.
So it comes parenthood, personhood, and then peer interaction that doesn't interfere with the first two.
Aha, yeah.
If you look at how traditional cultures initiated adolescence, it wasn't through the peer group. The young person, the adolescent, the young person who's becoming an adult, was initiated into the adult group by rituals and ceremonies conducted by elders and adults, such as, for example, the Jewish Bar Mitzvah ceremony, or initiation rites amongst indigenous people everywhere. So that it's not that the peers wouldn't be involved, but they wouldn't be in charge, and they wouldn't be the prime drivers. So today we talk about healthy teenage rebellion. But A, there's nothing healthy about it, and B, it's not rebellion, because a genuine rebellion is about becoming independent. But a lot of what's called the healthy teenage rebellion is actually sheer conformism to the peer group, opposition to the adults, conformism to the peer group. And so that those teenage relationships, if they are the primary drivers, get in the way of the genuine initiation into adulthood.
And Gordon, how then do and these are generalizations in part, how then do teenagers who are oriented towards their peers react then in the home environment? I'm asking that question so that people who are listening might recognize some of the behaviors of their children.
Well, when peers matter more, you could think of it, I mean, in terms of your spouses. If somebody matters more than you do, you can feel it, you can sense it. You don't have any natural power over them. There's another person on their radar. When they're sitting at the table, they're thinking of something else. They're not, you know, they're not allowing themselves to be nurtured. We all know this when we know it's a matter of relationship. We all have our own intuitions about it. It's just understanding it is about relationship that is important. And if we understand it's about relationship, then we begin to do the work of relationship just like we would do with others. We collect them. We collect their eyes, their smiles, their nods. We let them know that we're glad that they exist, and we invite them to exist in our presence. We do that kind of thing, and that's a context.
And we're less fickle than a peer group.
Yes. Well, we are meant to be their answer.
By the way, if you want to know how they behave, as you're both aware, part of my work over the years has been with drug addicts, yes, and with addictions in general. If you want to see addiction in action, try and get a teenager off their cell phones, or try and forbid them to be on social media. You're going to get the typical resistance, even aggression, of an addict that you're trying to separate from their drug of choice. And that's how you can tell that you've lost them, is when they react to your admonitions and your advice as if you were their enemy.
Gabor, a lot of people say when you use the word addiction in relation to social media that you're catastrophizing and you're overstating it and you shouldn't use that word.
Really?
No,
really?
I just...
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
no,
let me give you...
Go on.
Let me give you a definition of addiction and see if you still think so, okay? An addiction is manifested in any behavior in which a person craves because they find temporary pleasure or relief in it, but then it causes harm and they continue with it despite the harm. Now, you tell me how social media cannot be addictive. Now, is alcohol addictive, yes or no? Well,
yes.
The answer is yes or no. It depends on who's using it and what purpose. If it gives you temporary relief and pleasure and harm and you don't give it up, you've got an addiction problem. Mm. Same with social media. It can be used in a healthy way, obviously, but it can also be highly addictive. And that wonderful TV series,
Adolescence. Amazing, yeah.
Shows you very starkly the harmful impact of social media. So again, does it cause harm? Yes. Can you give it up? No. You've got an addiction.
Right.
So I don't think it's a harsh use. I don't think I'm exaggerating.
Also, besides being addictive, where it's not really giving you what is required, it competes with what it is that is required. So all the studies show that the social media, the video games are actually competing with the contact and closeness, the relational kind of activities and experiences that are required for healthy development. So there's a competitive nature there as well.
Yeah. Whenever I have these discussions with people, I do despair a little bit, Gabor, and you have become a grandparent, so you have a little grandchild there who's coming into this world. So where is the hope?
Well, where's the hope? Here's the deal. The good news is we don't have to learn anything. Actually, caring and connection and attachment is part of our nature. We're wired for it. So, you know, nobody has to teach a mother fox how to parent their kids, you know, or a mother bear or a dolphin. You know, and we all have these instincts. The problem is that the environment has to support and evoke those instincts, otherwise become alienated from them. And so if you actually take an infant, and believe me, I've just had the experience for the first time. Gordon has known this experience for a long time because he's a multiple grandparent. But you're with that infant, you're present with them, oh my God, every connection fiber in you is activated. So the hope is in ourselves, but pay attention to what's actually there. And in not letting the culture subvert us from ourselves.
It's actually simpler than we think, if we know where the answers are. And striving to be the answer to that grandchild, that child, that adolescent, and realizing they must be in relationship with you for you to be that answer, brings you to the right intuitions, brings you to be able to do and to bring the care to it.
So if they, as in people, young people, have a solid foundation and a good sense of self, then adding whatever it may be, social media or whatever, they're able to cope with it.
Absolutely.
They have that foundation.
Yes.
If
they've got the foundations, yes, the rest will sort itself out. But they need us more than ever in this day and age. They need us, those of the adults, the parents, the grandparents that care for them.
Yeah. Gordon Neufeld is in the Convention Centre tomorrow, guiding your youth, navigating attachment and the transition into adulthood. And there are still some tickets available if you get onto Convention Centre Dublin. That's tomorrow. Gábor Maté, thank you so much for taking time out. Sorry about the line earlier on. And congratulations again on becoming a grandfather. Thank you, Gábor. And thank you, Gordon. Thank you so much and good luck tomorrow.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And the book is Hold On To Your Kids, Why Parents Need To Matter More Than Peers. Quick commercial break.